This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus ceruleus with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps a sin flood of statism out of your brain. Can you feel it? Is it working, Davi Barker? Can you feel it?
I don't think so. I think I need some more rejuvenation. I'm feeling frazzled. My brain is everywhere.
So what's
and
going on?
And somehow still miraculously interconnected and functioning.
Yeah. So what's going on, my brother?
How's it going? I don't know. Just, you know, the world has gone mad.
The world has gone
mad. And I'm mad at it for it.
Why? What did it do to you?
I spent, you know, about an hour in the post office today, and I hate the post office. It's like socialism for packages.
I like that a lot.
You know, they have like these automated teller machines now where you can like go up and weigh it and measure it and tell it where it's going. And then you push a couple of buttons and a stamp prints out. And those rooms are open 24 hours a day. The problem is the one in my post office has been on the fritz for like a month. So there's no point in the machine even being there.
And
like,
there's
normally
no,
I can avoid the line or.
There's no incentive to fix it either. Like there would be in the free market,
yeah.
You know, like if you owned a bunch of vending machines and you had them around town and the bar that your vending machine was in called you up and said, yeah, this is the heroin machine. The heroin and assault weapons machine is on the fritz. Assault rifles machine is on the fritz. You'd have a guy there in an hour, you know, you wouldn't be like, I don't care. That's not my job. You know?
Yeah. You know what set me off today? This is what set me off today. There's no pen. There's no public pen or commons pen or socialist pen in this post office. If you want to use a pen, you either need to bring your own or you need to ask them for one of the ones they keep behind the counter, which of course means cutting in line and upsetting everybody because they don't know what you're doing. So I forgot my pen, and you need a pen. You cannot ship internationally without handwriting forms. It's just too complicated.
And we got to talk about that too.
So I go up and I ask this woman for a pen. She gives me a pen and I fill out a couple things. It runs out of ink. So I go back. I say, look, this pen is out of ink. And she rolls her eyes and like brushes a pen toward me while looking the other way. Like I can't even be troubled to look at you while you have this request for a pen in a business establishment like that requires the use of pens. And it's like, you know what?
You sound
I'm
like
a
you're
human
pounding,
being and you're a bureaucrat.
You sound like you're pounding a pulpit. I think you're just going plosively on the mic, but it works.
Plosive. The post office is, I don't know. Can I say what it's offing me? I guess not.
Maybe no,
not
and you radio. Also probably shouldn't say, you know, the second part of the word explosive in the same sentence with post office or you get your door kicked in. You know, this is all the Unabomber.
Explosive. I said plosive.
I know, but this is all the Unabomber's fault. Before that, you could like
I
take
could say it's plosing me off.
Before the Unabomber, you could mail packages, you know, just stick a bunch of stamps on a 4-pound package. And if you could shove it through the hole, you could get it in there.
Nope. You can't ship anything over 13 ounces anymore.
Yeah.
Which means that like I can ship pins. I do lapel pins and I can do like one t-shirt. But any more than that, it's over 13 ounces and it has to be parcel and not first class or whatever, which means it can't go in those blue boxes anymore.
So what's,
which means
like,
it has to go in the parcel chute, which is locked half the time. And it's totally unreliable and it's totally incomprehensible how these services work.
And what's the government thing with like amounts of things that they regulate to prevent explosives? Like, you know, would 12 ounces of explosives be acceptable? You know, would 3.8 ounces of liquid explosives on a plane be acceptable?
I'm not sure that that's a safety issue. I think that's just the incomprehensiveness of like, what is the difference between flat rate mail and first class mail and parcel mail and whatever? Like, I just want this many ounces to go to this address. Like, it doesn't have to be all of these complicated services with all, like, I'll go up with a package that's like on the cusp between one of these two services and they'll ask me how I want to ship it. And they'll say, if you ship it this way, it's $20. But if you ship it this way, it's $3, but it'll get there a day later.
Day later.
It's like,
why?
I know.
I know. It's government math, man. It totally is. Yeah.
Makes no sense. I've been trying to figure out their flat rate packages forever. They don't make any sense to me. Because they're not labeled. They printed all these boxes. They say, oh, yeah, the boxes are free. Anything that fits, it ships. But the boxes aren't labeled with the price. And there's no like price on any of the like marketing or signage for this stack of useless boxes.
I have spent an inordinate amount of my life waiting in line in post offices. I just use it to get stuff done, you know?
You know, the other thing is it's totally inconsistent. This is just my local post office. If I take an extra, like, I don't know, maybe 20-minute bike ride to the next town over, everything's nice. Everything's, people are friendly. They speak good English. There's pens everywhere.
You know, there's a Tom Waits song. It's talking about some, like, really weird hotel that he'd lived in one time at one point. It's a, like, the line in it really rang true with me. It was, everything's broken and no one speaks English. And you want to live in the lib pair, or at least, the, you know, the minarchist pair, where, like, things work and there are pens. That would be your romantic line in a song about it.
It really would. You know,
people speak English and there are pens.
You know, I've also noticed the people in the back room speak really good English, but not the people working the counter.
You know, we do.
So if that's, if by chance the line is so long that somebody from the back room comes out to work the line, I'm like praying for that person to be the guy who gets me.
That's because, government. You know, Mike DeLuna, who was a Freedom Fiends host, actually, he was a Michael Dean After Dark host for the first like five shows we did or something like that. And he and I did a whole episode one time on this post office that I wonder if you've ever been to. It's 101 Hyde Street in San Francisco. It is
maybe
I used to get my mail to the post office. I had a P.O. box in San Francisco down at 7th and Mission. And then the earthquake in 89 closed that building. And they like anybody who had a box there just suddenly instantly had a box. And it went from like south of Market, kind of nice hipster area, to like the hood. It went to like, you know, eight blocks up to the Tenderloin, to like the corner of, you know, Sucker Punch, like across from Sucker Punch Park on the corner of Drive By and Stabbed in the Neck Street, you know?
And you know what I think it is? It's that thing Ben Stone talks about, the iron law of bureaucracy or whatever, that you're always promoted to your level of incompetence. So like if you're an entry level postal worker and you're working the counter and dealing with customers and you speak English, you're going to get promoted to the back room.
Oh, yeah.
But if you can't speak English, you're stuck there at that entry level position forever.
But this particular post office in San Francisco was like 20 years ago and remains today, according to reviews on like Angie's List that he and I were reading from. It's literally, it's the place in the Bay Area that you get sentenced to go work if you're bad at other post offices.
Wait, where do you write reviews of post offices? I could do this all day.
I'll find it. Just search 101 Hyde Street post office review and it'll come up. I mean, this is like different than just a bad post office. Okay. This is, it's where everybody downtown who's on public assistance, you know, SSI or GA, goes to pick up their check if they don't have an address. It's general delivery for welfare. And they only ever have one window open of the three or four windows. And invariably, like if you get a package sent there and you have to go wait in line for it, like you spend 45 minutes waiting in line and get to the front of the line. And then they're like, oh no, you have to pick this up at the other post office. Like you wait there. There's no sign that says that. That's just the way it is. Now, I haven't really given you the full flavor of this post office. It's not uncommon to go in this post office and see a pile of fresh human excrement in the corner of the room.
What? In San Francisco. I mean, okay. Yeah, I'm not shocked anymore.
I have seen, I was coming out of this post office one time and it was broad daylight. There was a junkie shooting heroin using a parking meter as a tourniquet. He pushed his arm up against it. Like he was too down and out to even own a belt or a tie or something. He was like pushing his arm, broad daylight, like 1 p.m. on a weekday, pushing his arm outstretched against a parking meter to like get a vein and shooting up in it. Yeah. It was a festive. And you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people in San Francisco who think that without the government, the whole world would be like that. But this is the epitome of the government, you know?
No way. It's like San Francisco is the most like liberal pinko commie city and the most liberal pinko commie state of one of the most liberal pinko commie countries in the world. government was going to succeed anywhere, it would be San Francisco. Yeah.
And you do. And you know, this neighborhood, like, you know, you go do outreach like two blocks from there. You know where Hyde, it's 101 Hyde.
Yeah, I know right where that
Hyde
is.
Hyde and Golden Gate. It's really pretty from the outside. It's like all these murals, all these socialist worker murals on the side of the building. Yeah.
That's something that happens in San Francisco. They do love their Where does that style come from?
It comes from that guy. Who's the guy? He was married
that
to the
one guy.
Well, he was married to the, his wife was a famous painter too. She was the one with the like unibrow. You know who I'm talking about?
Oh, the Hispanic woman.
Yeah. The unibrow painter later. What's her name?
I don't know her name, but yeah, that is.
Yeah. Well, her husband,
trademark.
Frida. Yeah. Frida Kahlo. Yeah. And her husband was, I don't know. Yeah. Kahlo.
Interesting. You know, the thing about the post office is
Diego,
that it's really
Diego Rivera.
Diego Rivera.
Yeah, he. Okay. I don't know if he invented that style, but he really popularized it. And he lived in San Francisco. I mean, San Francisco City College has a big Diego Rivera original, you know, on the wall there. Of the it's always.
Wait, you're like, telling me the stereotypical socialist communist art style originated in San Francisco?
I think it originated in Cuba, probably, but. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it does kind of look South American. I'm looking at pictures of it now. Yeah, but here's the thing about the post office. The post office is the like defining crucible between your real libertarians and your like constitutionalist minarchist libertarians.
Well, because it's in the Constitution. It's set
in the
up
Constitution,
by the Constitution.
And therefore, like all of the economic rules that say that the post office should fail don't apply because it's written in this sacred document that the government is supposed to be in charge of parcels.
You know what else? Roads are in the Constitution, but they call them postal roads because that was the only reason you needed roads, you know, built by the government.
Yeah, because you didn't need military interstate highways at the time. Yeah. You needed somebody to, you know, ride a horse through, you know, snow and wind through because who knows how would anybody ever get junk mail without the government?
The other day it was like minus 13 here with like 20 to 30 mile an hour wind gusts. And my mailman, like, I just looked up, I don't hate my mailman. I like him. He's as someone who's living off of
fear the postman.
No, man. He's like, he slogged up to my porch and like put junk mail in my box. And I'm like, I'm really glad there's a system in place that pays you a pension to like suffer through that kind of weather to come give me junk mail that I throw away, man. Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this. To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
This is the Freedom Fiends. Execution style talk radio. A bullet of truth straight to the base of your brain while kneeling.
Where did that come from?
Turning on Fox News for 5 minutes today while eating my dinner and then being unable to and just going like, man, these people just want to kill us. They really do. I mean, I was listening, like, why do Republicans love the police so much? I was listening to some guy on there, Bo Gritz or something. I forget his name. He's some regular pundit on there who's like an ex-cop. And he was just like, the New York City police are the most professional police force in the nation. That mayor needs to just go back to wherever he came from. Man, hey, listen up, Republicans. I used to be like you. I used to be one of you. I'm nothing now. I'm a no government man. But here's the thing. The police are the people that are going to come take your guns when Nancy Pelosi just, you know, signs a signing statement on day one. They're not your friends.
I'm an abolish the government or abolish the post office kind of libertarian. That's too much government for me.
Yeah.
The post office.
It is.
You know, I think they originally wanted to federalize the delivery of mail so that they could get their tax forms. I think that was the reason that they needed somebody and they needed roads and somebody to sludge through all the snow and ice around the whole country so that they could make sure that everybody was filling out their W-2s and 1099s.
So they could send guys sludging through Wyoming's Winter Storm Morgan Freeman. Winter Storm Morgan Freeman is almost over now.
Groovy. Is that the name of a hurricane or something? What do you mean Winter Storm Morgan Freeman?
I should never turn on TV, man. When I turn on TV, I get things like that and write them down and say them on radio. I don't know, man. So I was listening, I was listening to Free Talk Live today. I want to talk about public art more, but did you hear Chris Cantwell melt down on Free Talk Live today?
I did a little bit about the religious guy.
Yeah.
About the chronic caller. You can't have freedom without God.
Yeah.
Guy.
It's actually the only time in my life I've ever agreed with Chris Cantwell. But then he went on a really entertaining, like, it's really fun when that guy gets wound up. And I think that's why they have him on Free Talk Live. I mean, you know, as like the nutty sidekick that goes, blah. Yeah. He was, I think he's going to have a heart attack on the air one day. I really do.
Man, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, but
it could just as likely happen anywhere else.
Yeah, but he cut the guy off because the guy was absurd and he was one of these people, as they said, that just calls Free Talk Live because it's the only talk show that'll put him on the air. which is like Free Talk Live's selling point, but I think it's kind of the opposite. Like, you'll let anybody on there, and you know they let like loons on there. I don't know.
Crazy thing about those loons, the loons that call into Free Talk Live because Free Talk Live takes any call, is that they immediately complain about not being given enough time.
Yeah. Well, they're like, the name's Free. And like Chris was saying things I thought before. Like the first thing he said was, and I'm not saying Free Talk Live's bad, like somebody's got to be the show that takes the calls from anybody and has it in their name, Free Talk Live. But first of all, Cantwell said, like, turned to Ian and said, like, why do we even take, let's stop taking phone calls, which is kind of a bold statement for a guy who's like the third wheel once a week. Although today wasn't his day. Wednesdays are his day. He's creeping into other days. And it's, you know, I may
like a fungus,
like a fungus. And I said that when they first got him on there and I was like, I can't believe you put that guy on there. And Ian and Mark were like, oh, don't worry, it's only one day a week. And I said,
well, I mean, he's the master of stealing the spotlight. Like, yeah, he went out Robin Hooding one day and ended up like a third of the coverage when it was on Comedy Central.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. But, and almost shot himself in the thigh at the same time. But yeah, he, you know, he said to Ian, like, why do we have to take phone calls or something like that? And I'm thinking, like, yeah, I came to that conclusion on my show about 9 months ago. Stop taking phone calls, man. But then he just went on a conniption fit of just screeching. And I can't tell if it's a character or if it's real, but even if it's a character, that kind of screeching, with that guy's outlook on life is going to give him an aneurysm. You know, he's just going to tip over, you know, on webcam. He was talking about trying to make videos go viral. And I'm thinking, like, that would go viral. Chris Cantwell dying of an aneurysm on radio.
It sounds like a good publicity stunt.
I'd click on that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I want him dead. I actually want, like, I don't want to be his AA sponsor, but you know, if he asked me and it was serious, I'd probably have to say yes. So yeah. Yeah. I'd like to help him out. I'd like to see him become a useful member of society.
Worms.
We're going to talk about public socialist art when we get back on the Freedom Fiends. On Fiend Phone, we're going to talk about Fiend Phone too. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Not really. That went out on air. Not really.
Not really.
Not really.
Sorta.
But
yeah, whatever.
When you really think about it.
Whatever. I don't even know anymore. This is Michael Dean.
You should like whatever you like, as long as you don't try and shut them down with force.
From the Freedom Fiends.
You can not like things. Not liking things is not an act of aggression.
Execution style talk
radio.
It's
not an offense.
A bullet of truth straight to the base of your brain while kneeling. Yeah, so I came up with that because I was watching that guy.
Man, I like the base of my brain the way it is, though.
I know, yeah. I don't want it altered. Altering your locus coeruleus. Yeah. I was talking to that guy, Bo Gritz, I think was his name. I don't know. Maybe that's someone else I'm thinking
Bo
of.
Bo Gritz? Is that a real name?
Look it up. Look it up. I don't know.
That's a great name.
It is. For an ex-cop who's a pundit on TV. Yeah. Yeah, and he was talking about those cops being shot in New York, and he said they were shot execution style. And I was yelling at the TV. I was like, no, they were ensconced in their armored vehicle. What was the word you used for protected?
They were sieged upon in their vehicles.
I thought you said they were sieged in their vehicle, meaning they were ensconced in it. Yeah, they were attacked in their vehicles. Yeah. And that is not execution style. Is a really specific style of murder. It's where someone is forced to kneel and then shot in the base of the brain. It's a military.
It's the cover of Boondock Saints. You can't just use that for no reason. I mean, like that's a real specific thing. It'd be like if you said, "Yeah, they were hung until dead," when really they were like shot in a convenience store.
Hung until dead. That is a legal term, isn't it?
Oh yeah, being killed by hanging and being hung until dead are different punishments. Did you know that?
No. Explain.
So yeah, so being hung until dead means that you are lifted off of your feet by the rope and left to choke to death. While being hung means that your feet are dropped out from under you and you're dropped to a length of rope and your neck is broken, which is faster.
Very
different, different punishments.
Bo Gritz is a different guy. Bo Gritz, he was like a guy who ran for president, kind of like started the Patriot movement in the 80s. He was the vice president of former Grand. He was in the KKK, and he was the negotiator that volunteered and was allowed by the FBI to go talk to at Ruby Ridge. It was kind of interesting, but he was like, he was like an ex-special forces.
That's too bad.
He was an ex-special forces. Well, I don't know. I mean, that was a situation where like people were dying and, you know, if you can get someone to get less people to die and talk to him, but he was like,
I just mean, that's a waste of a great name. I mean, Bo Gritz should be the name of some like phenomenal revolutionary country singer or something.
Or like, you know, or the sidekick on Walker, Texas Ranger or something.
Yeah. The bassist in my band Aftermath's name was Bo. I've always liked that name. I think it's cool.
Yeah. I used to have a good friend whose name was Bo. He's now a Wall Street attorney. Talk about something the 99% wouldn't like. I looked him up recently. I haven't talked to him in a long time, but he administrates funds of funds. I didn't know that was a thing, but it was like, you know, like we have this giant, you know, monetary fund, but that's not big enough. We want to be the guy in charge of the funds of funds. Yeah.
I'm willing to bet a lot of things in the financial sector aren't really things anyway.
they're devices. They're
financial
created
instruments.
That's the word I'm looking for.
Conceptual. Yeah. They're conceptual whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
They aren't things. You can't eat them. You can't burn them as fossil fuels.
You could. I'm sure they generate a lot of paper at some point. Even in this day and age of electronic everything. Now, going back to the post office, why, when you send something international,
do they
make you scribble something down on paper in your own illegible handwriting, and then you hand it to them, and then they have to type it in while trying to read your writing? Why?
Because socialism, that's why. Because there's no
government.
Competition.
Yeah.
There's no incentive to innovate. There's no incentive to digitize the forms. There's no incentive to... plus, I mean, the reason it happens, it's more Luddite-ish for international mail than standard mail is because fewer people ship things internationally. And so there's less of a pressure. Like if people were doing this regularly, it'd be lines out the door. It honestly takes me like 10 minutes of like standing there watching this person henpeck data into the computer. If I have like two or three international orders.
When I lived in LA, I used to go like wait in line at the post offices and stuff. Cause I've always made things, like no matter what job I had, even before I was making a living, you know, doing media production or whatever. But, I always have, like, you know, I'd put out a novel and self-publish it, like before there was on-demand printing, and I'd print 1,000 copies of it and sell them, and it would take me 3 years to sell 1,000 copies of them. And I'd, you know, every week I'd get, you know, 5 or 10 orders for them, and I'd package them up, and I'd go take one trip down on my bicycle to the post office and stand in line and sell them out. I've always had this, like, do you have this need to ship orders almost immediately like I do?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I feel like it's not just good business, but it's like I'm putting some of myself out in the world, and it's almost like
it's like being in debt for me. I want to pay off a debt the moment that I have it, because like I just don't want to hang an L over me. So if a person has paid me and I still am holding the product, it is to me the same as debt.
Yeah, it's almost like too, like, you know, if I were to die and it didn't get shipped, like I have to send it, so I make sure that guy gets the fiends buttons in case I get hit by a bus, you know. I used to run in LA, I used to run into pretty often, in the post office on, the one in, I don't know the neighborhood, Los Feliz. I used to run into Joe Lally from the band Fugazi. Fugazi was kind of still together, but they kind of were on hiatus, and he'd moved out to LA, and he was like shipping out, you know, he was shipping out like 20 times as much stuff as I was, obviously, but it was, you know, we'd be like, just kind of like head nod and call each other by name, but like, hey, there's, you know, rock star at my post office. Cool.
Yeah. I want to talk about Strange Days, man. You brought it up.
Great movie.
First segment.
Great movie.
It is probably one of my favorite all-time movies, and I feel like it's totally underappreciated, and most people have never heard of it. So when you brought it up, I was like, yeah.
You know, that movie is a really good example of this guy, Hubert Selby, the guy that I made the documentary on. He had a kind of saying for writing. It was always begin a story with a crime in progress. And I heard that.
It does do that.
I heard
it?
That Selby quote. I heard that Selby quote like days before I saw the movie Strange Days. And I was like, man, this sure. Yeah, they got it for this.
And you're sucked right in.
Yeah. It begins with like one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. It's like a kind of a drive-by robbery of a restaurant. It was like, you know, four or five guys just run into a restaurant from two different entrances and you know, spoiler alert, it's an old movie. We can say it anyway. So, they just start like shooting people and mugging them and robbing them and taking their money. And the weirdest thing, this just blew my mind, was like in the middle of this robbery, like one of the guys is running through the kitchen and he stops and pulls out a crack pipe and takes a hit of crack and then goes back to the robbery. Like, whoa. Like, man, what a weird rush for a movie. And then you find out that he's like digitally taping the experience to sell bootleg, you know, like mini discs of it to this.
He's a content creator. That's what he is.
He is. And well, actually, he's a guy who's hired by the content creator. And there's this whole underground market because there's this technology of this thing you can attach to your brain and actually like feel and see and hear and smell and taste experiences that have been recorded. Yeah. And what did you say was the first time you knew there was a black market?
It was the first time I had seen the black market demonstrated in a film. Like I had experienced the black market living in Saudi Arabia because the people in our compound were like brewing bathtub whiskey and playing poker and things like that. And we had bootleg American VHS tapes that were smuggled in. But this was the first time I'd seen it in a movie, and I got the connection to the drug war.
Speaking of the connection, I'm just reeling on how much younger you are than me, because the first, like my first movie impression of the fact that there was a French, you know, that there was a black market was the movie The French Connection, which was a 70s. The movie The French Connection, the 1971 movie that, you know, I saw probably in 1974 when I was 10. That movie and the Dirty Harry movies, but I think this was before the Dirty Harry movies even. This movie, The French Connection, it made the template for like not only like every cop show ever since then, but like TV and movies. Like, there wouldn't, I don't think there would be, you know, a Breaking Bad without the French Connection. I don't think there would be a Walking Dead without the French Connection.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, this came out in 95 and I was 14 at the time. And it was Strange Days and Dangerous Minds were the first two movies that I went to with friends without my parents.
Oh, Dirty Harry came out the same year. So go on.
Okay. But so yeah, this was like, you know, me and some other 14-year-old kids from high school who were just going because it was the action flick that was being advertised. And it blew my mind. And it was really ahead of its time, if you think about it, because all about like police brutality and social networking in a sense. Like, it is sort of about this like populist outrage over a viral video.
And the rap, and, even the rapper in it's great. It's a made up rapper, but I like his raps. His name is Jericho One. Jericho One. And he's a very like, you know, socially conscious, like he's almost like a force, like a cult. Like, he's constantly surrounded with people, and like, you know, if he says something, like Los Angeles will riot. Like, he's got that kind of like influence on the people.
Yeah. And the main character is this sort of, I don't know, very sympathetic for me, because he's sort of this like washed up failure who wanted to be a writer, I think, or something like that. Kind of like the guy in Limitless. I'm always attracted to those characters, because that's sort of how I feel.
You're not a washed up writer. You're not a has-been. You're an on your way to being. And this was way before that. So why did you relate to a has-been writer at that age?
Because I wanted to be a writer at that age. So even though that was still my fear. Like, those are the role models that I saw for writers, was either like successful writers that I knew about who had published and were doing their own thing, or Hollywood stories about failed writers. And most Hollywood stories are about failed writers.
Do you know,
because so many of the writers in Hollywood are writing about their experience failure.
I was watching some movie with my wife one night, and I was like, how come so many Hollywood movies have a protagonist who is divorced and like trying to get back with his wife and child? And she said, because most Hollywood screenwriters are divorced and trying to get back with their wife and child.
Yeah. And that was this guy all over.
You know, do you know who wrote the screenplay for and produced Strange Days? I had no idea.
No.
James Cameron. No wonder that movie.
Wow. Really?
Good. Yeah. Yeah, it's got a great cast, too. It's got Ralph Fiennes. Is that how you say it?
The only one I remember is Juliette Lewis.
Yeah, and it's got Angela Bassett, Tom Sizemore, totally underrated actor, Vincent D'Onofrio. He's good. He played Abby Hoffman in Steal This Movie, I think it was called. Or Steal This Film.
Awesome.
I forget which.
I haven't seen that, but I'll have
to. Yeah.
Great movie. Go see it. If you haven't seen all the movies from 1995, start with this one.
Yeah, it is good, man. Worms.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends, the libertarian movie review show. We're kind of turning into that TV and movies.
In your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach, and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is, and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Fiends, yo. Fiend phone is like an alcoholic father that you don't want to wake up.
How so?
Well, I'm glad we're back on Fiend phone, and I think it's sounding and performing better than ever. We've pushed back the release to probably Monday. It was going to be tonight, but last night we had some issues, some of them related to Davi's computer not having been rebooted in 2 years, but or 2 months. But
it was only a year and a half.
Yeah, something like that. People reboot your computers every night. I turn them off when I sleep. They work better. They need to take a dump of all that memory and all those pixels. So, Derek did a bunch more work.
When they're cranky, you need to put them to bed.
Derek did a bunch more work on it today. You know, with input, we're constantly testing. And I was doing some testing with Christian tonight, you know, the boyfriend of Diana Kyler, the Fiend's co-host. Christian is amazing. He used to, he's a great guy and I really dig him, but he also used to be the team leader for a group of software testers at a company. So he really knows like how to put stuff through its paces. And we got a lot of good feedback for Derek to do for the next iteration tomorrow of Fiend Phone. And I've been writing the manual for Fiend Phone. It's a work in progress, but if you go to the Fiend Phone site, fiendphone.com, and click on Quick Start Guide, you'll see some of the work I've done. Although I'm going to have to take some of the screenshots over because it's changing constantly. So we discovered this really weird error in it that may have contributed to some problems last night, but it's that, or the thing that makes this happen probably did, and it's been fixed, or it's being fixed. There's one slider on it where if both people are talking at the same time and one person moves their slider, it crashes both people's programs. Now that sounds like, to most people, they're like that. Why would you admit that? And I'm like, 'cause I like to explain the process, and the final version will absolutely not do that. But it's just kind of like the weird,
'cause this is a teaching hospital.
Yeah. And it's also like the thing that some software developers would leave in, 'cause they're like, that won't happen very often. And it like did not happen with the other slider, but yeah, it's just kind of all part of the process. You know, I was thinking,
you apply the formula in Fight Club terms.
Yes. And explain the formula.
It's calculating the average cost of an out-of-court settlement versus the cost of a recall. And if the recall is more expensive than the out-of-court settlements, you don't have one.
I don't think it was specifically out-of-court either. It was the cost of a settlement, which could be either in court or out of court. But
oh yeah, that's true. Yeah. I guess it's absolute cost of a recall versus the consequences of not having.
Yeah,
a
it's basically doing the maths on how much the lives of, you know, children in the backseat of cars dying are worth to a big corporation.
More fat guys in the front seat of cars in this particular case.
Yeah, and you can tell because they burn more, they melt more.
Yeah. Because of the gelatinous fat melted to the steering wheel.
Yeah. Fight Club. That's a heck of a movie. Heck of a movie. You know, the thing we forgot to mention when we were talking about it with Lou last night was a scene we can't say on radio, but it's basically a guy named Lou comes down into a basement and was like, I'm Lou. Who the are you? Yeah, it's kind of funny. Lou. Lou, that's not our Lou, but it's a Lou.
It's a Lou.
Yeah, so I was thinking about when I go to, when we release Fiend Phone and invite people to donate, I'm kind of joking with myself, but kind of actually thinking about crafting some advertising words. I don't know if it's for a radio ad or a print ad, but, or a web ad, but basically most of the people I know are anti-IP. They're anti-intellectual property. And we are releasing this open source under the BSD three clause license, which is absolutely an open source license. Anybody can do anything they want with this and not pay us. They need to credit any use of it, you know, in the documentation somewhere. But I was thinking about this, and I was thinking like all these people that are anti-IP, they better donate to this if they use it, because if they don't, they're stealing. No, I don't think that. But really, I really put your money where your mouth is, people, when this thing comes out. If you're anti-IP, you should give a donation to Fiend Phone, because we are working our little tookuses off for free here and giving it to the world and asking
even
for a donation. Even $2, man. Yeah. I got a $4 donation the other day, and I wrote the guy, like, thank you very much. I appreciated it. But that's two $2 donations, so. Worms.
Worms.
Worms. Yeah. Those anti-I people, most of them won't donate. They'll be like, I don't have to donate. It's free, man. It's free. The Free Rider. It's Free Rider Software. That'd be a good name for a software company that's open source. Free Rider Software. I'd like to see a logo for that.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges.
This is Davi Barker from ShinyBadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at ShinyBadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Martin Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite Nipair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. I'm your host, Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster, and I'm talking to Mr. Davi Barker, the Shiny Badger. Are you there? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
I have not been contacted by the government.
Yeah. You know, it's really weird. People keep saying, like, I keep seeing people I don't know who are discovering the fiends, which is really cool. But a lot of times they say, like, I really like that interview you did with that lady the other night or with that guy the other night. And I'm like, those aren't interviews. Those are our co-hosts, man. People don't understand that there are 12, that every show, almost every
not
show.
Not grasping the concept.
Yeah, it's like me and then one or two other people from a group of 12 people, except Sunday nights is Derek J and one of those other 12 people. Yeah. It's.
I mean, we're always introduced as co-hosts, and it's not like we really, you know, sitting around and field questions about our various lives and projects, so I don't know what makes it an interview. But
well, maybe they missed the beginning of it or something, you know, where, or the top of each hour where I say it's the co-host. I don't know. I don't care as long as people listen. I don't even care if people don't listen, because there's the free rider problem. No, it's not a free rider problem. And I wanted to kind of do a tagline for those joining us in Belle Fouche for the second hour here, Belle Fouche, South Dakota, and Sturgis, South Dakota. Sturgis is South Dakota, right? Yeah, it is. I believe. I don't know. I'm not that good on geography. I've never been there, but it sounds cool, and I know we're on the radio.
I have no idea. I have as much reason to believe you are correct as incorrect.
It is. So they take us for the second hour every night during the week, and that's kind of cool. I dig it, man, because, and we're delayed there, so we're drive time. We're from like 4 a.m. to 5 a.m. or 5 a.m. to 6 a.m., which is, you know, it's drive time for people like going to work in the oil fields up there. So that's pretty nifty. I dig it. And actually, we're on the radio at, what's the thing with all the president's faces carved? Mount Rushmore. We're on the radio there. I've actually thought about buying little radios with with headsets and like epoxying them to the station we're on, and then having someone up who lives up there go to Mount Rushmore and hand them out, like, look like they're a docent, you know, like, here's the tour guide to the radio, you can listen to it on this. Like, they'd be hearing the fiends. Be fun. But I know that in the last hour I kind of didn't time it going. I was still mid rant. I hadn't gotten to the redemption in the third act. So if anybody stopped listening at that point, they probably did, because they're probably like, man, that guy just sounds bitter. I didn't really.
They might have thought they were like listening to Freedom Main Radio or something.
Give me money. Yeah. Yeah. No, I like money, and I basically want to make money at this so I can pay Derek more, because he worked so hard on it. You know, I get a little stipend here. I pay myself, you know, enough for burrito once in a while. But Derek is really working. I mean, you think about this, like, so far I've paid him $1,200 of the. I've paid him like $1,200 of the $1,150 we've made. Like, I'm out $50 or $100 on this. And you know, I mean, he's worked like 8 hours a day for like 3 weeks on this, in addition to having an 8 hour a day day job and having like a wife and four kids. And that's, and like, computer programmers make, you know, $100-$200 an hour, good ones, you know, people that are really good and work in an office somewhere doing it. So yeah, he's doing this basically for free, but I really want people to donate to Fiend Phone when it comes out, cause it's going to be great. It's going to be life changing. And because it really would be putting people's money where their mouth is, because so many people are so anti IP, and they can't, I can't imagine that they imagine that, you know, work is just like, everybody just works that hard on things that are life changing and world changing for the heck of it, you know, like, not that you expect to get paid for it, but it's nice to get paid for it. And there's so many people that are so anti IP that I would just like to see them, you know, do something other than yell at people who sell software, you know, like, actually support some people who are giving it away for free as a labor of love to the world to improve Liberty Media. So there, that's what I was going to say. And you're saying
makes sense to me.
And you're saying I have some kind of like, that's like libertarian labor theory of value. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I had a conversation actually with a number of people. This has been on my mind recently too. of the creeping labor theory of value. And it's not a big deal.
Explain what the labor theory of value is and why it's wrong.
Well, it's the notion that something is valuable because you worked on it, right? The thing is not, it's like rejecting the subjective theory of value, which says that things are valuable because people place value in them, and and instead saying that things are objectively valuable based on how much labor went into producing it. And and this is a way in which communists get around the economic calculation problem by saying, oh, no, there's this objective measure to the things that we're going to centrally plan, and it's the labor that goes into production.
And, you know, I gotta say, I never heard the term, like, I never cared about economics. You know, I was just like, leave me alone, man. I want liberty. I don't care about that. Like, I've never really, still to this day, but wait, until recently, like, never really studied that kind of stuff. I never heard the term Marx's labor theory of value. Is that what it's called? I don't even know what it is. I don't know what that is. I never heard that until, like, probably I heard Nima Vedati say it like 3 years ago, and he's very well versed in all that kind of stuff. Oh, you know what's kind of interesting? Speaking of like libertarian, you know, academics and smart people, Tom Woods contacted me today and wants to know, like, how much I charge for audio consulting.
Get it in writing.
Get in writing. Yeah, I will this time.
I mean, not anything against Tom. Nothing Woods. Against That's just him, general but, advice.
Well, no, because I did some late. I did some paid consulting for a libertarian bigwig, and he forgot he hired me and was like, "Oh, I thought you did that for free," and then paid me.
I thought I was a free rider in this relationship. I don't understand. What do you mean you charge for consulting?
And it's a guy who says he's a millionaire, or like everyone thinks he's a millionaire. He may or may not be, but no, Tom Woods is a good guy. And if I do work for him, I imagine it'll be an honest day's pay for an honest day's work. But it's kind of funny because for like 2 months now, people, like probably 10 people in the past 2 months, have written me and said, Tom Woods keeps saying on his podcast that he needs to improve his audio, and is there anybody that could help him do it? And like, apparently I'm the go-to guy in Liberty for that now. And people keep telling me I should contact him. And I'm like, I'm not going to contact him. I have a reputation. People will keep recommending him until he contacts me. And today, James Babb wrote me on Facebook and CC'd Tom Woods and said, like, what's your number? Tom Woods wants to talk to you. And I like gave him my number, and he wrote me back 5 minutes later. And he's like, yeah, we'll need to talk about this soon. So that happened. But
yeah, I get tagged on Facebook a lot for people looking for branding or logo work. And I've sort of become the de facto go-to Liberty.
Yeah.
I design logos guy, which I like. I think that's a cool gig to have.
Yeah. You did some great work on the Fiendphone branding, but the problem is I didn't hire you early enough in the genesis of the project, in the duration, you know, the ongoing of the project. So I had already done some kind of like really crappy looking graphics for it. So when people go to the site or go to the program or watch the video that's going to come out, it's going to be like one third your stellar graphic work and like two thirds my kind of crappy graphic work. And somewhere on the site, it says like, you know, graphics and branding by Davi Barker and Michael W. Dean, but no one's going to know, like, well, I mean, if they know you, they're going to know the good stuff is by you and the other stuff is by me. But yeah, I should have brought you in earlier.
Yeah. I mean, it was just sort of, you had your Raven on the Wire thing going early on. And I think that's a really strong logo.
Yeah,
because it sort of references phone lines. Like, I feel like it means like I'm getting on a line and I'm yakking with people, right? Because crows are sort of known for yakking.
Yeah, that's the idea.
And it works really well, I think.
But the thing is, if you look closely, it's not a phone line. It's like a barbed wire.
It's barbed wire.
It's barbed wire without the barbs. You know, it's just that kind of like two strand old school, you know, fence wire. But
Okay.
Yeah. And I found the crow somewhere, and it was, I looked for a picture of a bird. I searched like bird on a wire and silhouette and Creative Commons or something. And I found one that was, it was actually public domain. It was listed as that. Not a lot of people use that license, you know, to say public domain, which is kind of a non-license, but it's absolutely an understood, anybody can do anything with it. Then there was like no attribution required, no name, no artist. And it was on a wire, but the wire was really thin. And I found a photo of some, you know, fence wire, and then photoshopped it in. And I really do like it. And then for some reason, I just put a bison on the wire too, because I live in Wyoming, and that's like the symbol of Wyoming. And there are
I like the bison. For me, like for me, like the bison or the buffalo is always is a Hunter S. Thompson animal because he was in Where the Buffalo Roam.
Yeah.
Right. Is a movie about Hunter S. Thompson. So that animal is always sort of like classic Americana of the mind kind of thing. And
well, you know,
I don't know. I
live in Wyoming and it kind of is classic Americana of the mind. There are actual bison here and there are coyotes. Well, there's coyotes in LA, but did I ever tell you that my cat was in the mouth of a coyote in LA?
Yeah, you have, but go ahead.
In Agoura Hills. I forget we have an audience at sometimes. I was going to say like, oh, I've told you about it. Never mind. And if I go back to talking about Fiend Phone, there's going to be people going, I want to hear about your cat surviving a coyote attack. Cat, we lived in Agoura Hills. And between us and the post office, in fact, there was a field that often had coyotes in it at night howling and eating rabbits and, you know, having feeding frenzies out there. And we never let our cat out then. I let her out sometimes now because we have an enclosed backyard and I basically stand in front of a computer screen all day looking out that window so I can keep an eye on her. When it's nice weather, I let her out. But yeah, she never could go out then because we had coyotes. And she snuck out one night around dusk when we were bringing groceries in and, you know, like ran past our feet. And then I realized that she wasn't there. And we started looking all over the house for her and couldn't find her. And I took this big, I had one of those like 4D cell battery mag flashlights like bouncers use. And I went outside looking for her. And I looked down in the gully and she was in the mouth of a coyote. And I didn't have guns then. It was before I had guns. And my cat's going to be 17 this year. And this was, you know, many years ago. And I screamed as loud as I could, just blah, and threw this flashlight. You know, these things weigh like 8 pounds. I threw the flashlight as hard as I could at the coyote. It was like 25 feet away. And I hit it squarely in the side. And it went, arp, and dropped my cat and ran off. And it's really lucky because, you know, like 5 seconds later and this, my cat would have been lunch, you know, it was probably going to take off and eat it. I think that was the plan. And the cat was in shock, but we took her to the vet and like survived. She was kind of in shock for like a week, like could barely eat. We had to like force feed her liquid, you know, with an eyedropper and, but she got better and she survived. And then like, she's so feisty. Like after that, after she recovered, like whenever we'd hear coyotes outside, she'd like run to the door. Like,
hey, we're past. I'm bringing it up.
Yeah, all right. QBG.us can set up your small bit.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Freedom Fiends. Socialism for packages. That's not us. That's the post office. And Davi made a cute little meme. A nice meme. So we're going to talk more about that skunk Marx, that horrible, filthy communist, Karl Marx.
Fear the post office. It's too much government.
Is that your new sticker?
Yep. Anywhere that the government can deliver, it can conquer.
Yeah. Well, actually, when you go to send international mail, isn't there a list of like on the little thing you have to fill out on the back? Aren't there like 4 countries they won't deliver to?
Probably.
Isn't it like,
I don't know,
Pakistan,
North Korea, Iran?
Yeah.
Cuba, maybe.
It's funny that that the government calls those state sponsors of terrorism. Aren't all states state sponsors of terrorism?
You know, only if you're concerned about, you know, definitions and
what you tell
mean.
Me about the definition of terrorism.
I'm a big stickler on the definition of terrorism because it's pretty much the same as the definition of government. And if you go back and you look at least the current Oxford English Dictionary definition is the use of violence or threat of violence to achieve social, political, or religious goals. It's political violence against civilians. And that's the distinction, is that it's against civilians.
That's what all governments do.
Right. But so that's the thing. Like, the definition of government, at least the current one that we're working from, is the use of the monopoly on violence against civilians in a geographical area. And so, like, all of the things that the government uses its violence for is to achieve a social or political goal. Right. And it's against civilians. Right. And so, like, it is textbook the definition of terrorism. It's just, but see, when the CIA defines terrorism, they add a clause that says by subnational groups. That way they sort of have defined themselves out of the discussion. But apparently the original Oxford English Dictionary definition, like before the sort of pre-war on terror definition, was government by intimidation. So, like, government was the definition, and in that sense, like, that is every government. Like, that's practically redundant. So, I just think that's interesting. I just, you know, the government is essentially the monopoly terrorist organization in a geographical location. And the other thing is all subnational terrorist groups are essentially aspiring governments.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what, you know, is Islamic's, what does it stand for? Islamic State. It
depends on what is
ISIS.
Is.
What depends. ISIL, ISIS. Yeah. They want to be a government, you know?
Yeah. They claim to be.
I mean, there are,
that's all other terrorist organizations too. Like, the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, was aspiring for political change to establish a government. The Irgun in Israel that became the IDF was a terrorist organization before the foundation of Israel. So, like, this myth that we have that the government is like people who need a system, and so they get together and voluntarily contract to, like, form this thing, that has no historical precedent. All governments in history are the terrorist organization that achieved a monopoly in a given geographic region. It's like, that's what it is.
Basically, a government is the most successful terrorist in an area. They win. They won the war. They get to.
They're the ones that won.
Yeah, yeah. Although
they get to go from overt violence to the mere threat of violence to achieve their social political goals.
Yeah. I like that on Fiendphone we can both laugh and talk at the same time without it getting crunched down like on Skype. But you might hit your buff dump there real quick once in a while if you get a little clicky.
Yeah,
but
I do occasionally.
Yeah, and, you got to do it when you're talking, not when the other person's talking. That's that's how it works. So, yeah, I mean, you said something about all governments were the terrorists who won in a specific region, but I wouldn't say that all terrorists are aspiring governments. You know, like that loony kid that couldn't get none that went and shot a bunch of ladies in San Diego. I would say that
he wasn't a terrorist. Why? He wasn't trying to achieve. He wasn't trying to achieve political goals. He was a criminal.
Okay.
Like, mass shootings are not, like, Columbine is not terrorism. It's a mass shooting. It's a different category of crime, and it's a criminal offense. It's not a political offense.
Isn't there a definition of terrorism that does not involve political ends of just trying to terrorize the general public with acts of violence?
Yeah, but it's always to influence their political decisions. I think that's the distinctive characteristic.
I didn't read the manifesto by that loon in San Diego, but maybe he had a political end. Maybe he wanted, you know, the government to require that ladies give him some.
Maybe
he wants sex stamps along with his food stamps.
There you go.
In a package.
From each according to their ability, to each according to their need.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN or virtual private network from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Stop sending me videos of Stefan Molyneux.
I didn't do it.
There's somebody in Texas right now looking at his radio going, the radio's talking to me. I'm done with Stefan Molyneux. We're on to, I appreciate it, but we're on to other things. We're on to real socialism. He's just socialism light, man. It doesn't matter. So Davi's,
I'm not sure he's socialism anything. What do you mean?
I don't know. He's getting kind
of... The only thing he wants socialized is, intellectual property, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. He wants a labor union that will come along, the podcaster's labor union that'll make sure he's paid for the number of hours he puts into work.
There's the labor theory of value for you. He produces so much content, and if you don't value it subjectively, you're stealing his labor.
Davi's sending me like some kind of Russian kink site that's like not even softcore porn. It's just the ladies have clothes on, but it's they're kink. They're fighting.
The most they expose is their elbows.
They're fighting. They're fighting over apples in a socialist market. What'd you say? Describe the picture of the socialist apple sellers.
Oh, this is mind blowing to me. So it's a communist apple market where apple farmers come to sell their apples. And this is November 1991 at some food market in Kaluga, Russia. And it's like row after row after row of men all in the same jacket, all in the same hat, arranging their apples in the same little stacks and weighing them with the same scales, so that nobody has any sort of like marketing advantage. Like everybody's apples are worth just the amount of labor they went into growing them.
Yeah. It's because they probably have some labor union that has requirements of how everything's displayed, so nobody has an advantage.
Well, they don't need a labor union. They have a Soviet union. So
yeah,
it's just weird. Like this is of all the pictures of communism I've seen, this one really kind of blows me away.
Yeah,
because it's so uniform.
Send it to
and
me.
I've seen pictures of uniformed communism, all the people waving their same flags and wearing their same coats and whatever, but I've never seen a market quite like this before.
Yeah, it's weird, man. Send it to me. I didn't actually see it. You described it, right it to me, and I was hoping you'd send it. I want to see the ladies fighting over apples. No, I don't really. I'm not. I don't like foxy boxing or anything like that. I don't get off on mud wrestling. No, they're
all. There's nothing like purient about it. It's they're all sort of middle-aged elderly people, and they're all so grizzled from communism.
I know. It's like Russia produces like gorgeous 19-year-old women who by the time they're 40 look like they're 90 and look like apples that have been left out in the sun because
they haven't, because lotion is communist bourgeoisie propaganda. That's why.
Yes, they don't exfoliate because you can't buy that there apparently. So Marx's labor theory of value, the idea that people, like Stefan Molyneux should be paid. He actually said at one point, like, if you listen to me, you should send me a dollar for every podcast you listen to or something like that. Like
that's what he asks for. I think he asked for 50 cents an episode.
He was centrally planning your donations.
Yeah, he was objectifying your subjective value.
Yep. So, the theory, Marx's labor theory of value, I never knew this term until 3 years ago, but come to think of it, I think every artist I ever met in San Francisco was going by that operation because people would make these hideous paintings. I knew well, friends, girlfriends, roommates of girlfriends, everyone I knew was an artist of some kind or going through trash bins and finding shiny things in lingerie and stapling it to a canvas and, then doing some more crystal meth and then doing more of it.
Yeah.
But they all they would spend just inordinate hours on this stuff and they would say that the world was treating them unfairly because they weren't getting, they weren't selling these at all, if they were, for what they were worth because of the hours they'd put into them.
Art is the quintessential proof that the labor theory of value is BS, because I could spend 12 hours, you know, digging a hole and filling a hole and calling it art. And it doesn't matter. But at the same time, like the greatest example of subjective value I ever saw in art school was a woman who was Wiccan, and she produced three pieces of plywood and a stool that she painted black and said, "This is the corner of a room. I've cursed it. The corner of this room is cursed." And she sold these three pieces of plywood and a stool for $15,000 to someone who thought that her weird hokey curse on this black stool was like a real thing.
I used to have this roommate in San Francisco named Oliver Arms, who basically what I describe it as throwing paint off of a ladder. You know, it's kind of Jackson Pollock-y style, non-representational painting that it didn't do anything for me. But people who liked that kind of art said he was really good at it. So I'm not going to discount it. I just know what I like, and it wasn't that. And he worked really hard on it. And, you know, he went to the Art Institute of San Francisco, which is what, you know, everybody does there who's, well, actually the commercial artists go to the, there's two different art institutes there. What are they? There's Art Institute of San Francisco and the Art, I forget. There's another one where the actual, like,
the people, Institute of Art of San Francisco.
Yeah. It's like the, you know, the people that end up doing graphic arts for Coca-Cola and stuff. But the other one,
I went to San Jose State and they have a pretty good art department.
Yeah.
So,
but this guy ended up, he had a gallery showing somewhere, and this director, Martin Brest, who's a big Hollywood director, he directed like Scent of a Woman, bought one of his paintings, and all of a sudden, like, Oliver was in galleries and selling his paintings for like $10,000. And I guess that's how it happens. Like, somebody famous buys your painting and all of a sudden you're making money at it. Although he was not really a Marx's labor theory of value guy. And he worked, like, he and I used to go dig holes for a living. Like, you know, like one day a week,
yeah,
we'd go work for this geotechnic survey company. And it was kind of, we had a good time. We had some jokes, and it was funny. Somebody made up, one of the Hispanic guys on that team made up a joke. He said, "Catholics in the sun, Protestants in the shade," which is a weird, like, it's a weird, takeoff on imperialism or something. I don't know, but, it was an interesting crew. It was an interesting crew to be on, because it was basically like 8 or 10 guys that all were above average intelligence and had some college and then dropped out because we had better things to do. So there were some interesting conversations on that crew. And I was I probably did the least amount of labor of anybody on that crew. I don't like physical labor, man, unless it's for, you know, like fixing my own house or something. I don't like working for the man. I'd rather use my brain.
Yeah. So the problem is, if you accept the labor theory of value,
there is no sense
of producing quality.
Oliver Arms, I'm not disparaging his art, you know, for what it is, people like it, but Oliver Arms has a Wikipedia page, if you go check it out, and I'm pretty sure it's written by Oliver Arms. There's a person who's edited it a lot named, like, West German Colonel or something, and I think it's him. Pretty sure it's him.
Right. But so there are other artists that produce phenomenal work very quickly, and it's like, I don't know.
Like you do great work quickly. I've seen,
I like,
you do it.
50% of my work. Yeah. No, so I met this guy at Walker Stalker Con in Atlanta who was doing it was like Jackson Pollock, where it's like paint being thrown at canvas, but it was just black, white, and red, and he was doing portraits of monsters from horror movies. And they were phenomenal, like, because they really looked like the monster that he was trying to depict in a very sort of spooky way, but the style was so chaotic, like, it looked like you'd walked into a murder scene or something. Like, it had that, like, splat kind of quality.
You were gonna say there's somebody at Comic-Con, like, lining zombies up at a canvas and then shooting them and then selling the canvas.
No, but, you know, that might do well.
Is he kind of drawing the equivalent of that?
But so here's the thing. You're either producing quality or you're not. And if you're not producing quality, it doesn't matter how long you spent producing not quality, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And
people are probably more interested in buying something phenomenal that was done quickly than something horrible that took years.
It's true. It's totally true.
But, you know, if you really want to make money in art, you don't do art. If you want to have a better chance at it, what you do is you provide services and products to artists. Like, you know, you don't start a rock band, you start a recording studio. You don't become a sure. painter, you get a Michael's Paint franchise or something, you know, Michael's Art Supplies. Because,
sure.
because then you make money off of all those people who are horrible, which is 95% of artists. You know,
like they you have don't to make money mining gold. You make money selling jeans, equipment.
Selling blue jeans. And yeah, I mean, literally that was like the Levi Strauss plan, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. All those, interesting. All, so those miners, all those miners yeah. needed good pants. That's how Levi Strauss started.
This sounds like we need to do a Bavarian gold strategy session.
Yeah. You and me and Ben Stone have to get on Fiend Phone and have our
we need to figure out how to exploit all of the bad libertarian projects.
Yeah. Well, you know, I exploit them by not being a libertarian, welfare queen. I'm actually producing things other than me talking. I'm actually Derek and I are producing, literally it's something that like all the podcasters that are out there begging are going to be begging for next year because it works better, man. This rush.
Except it's free.
Yeah. And there it's free. So give me money, give us money, you know. I think Libertarian Welfare Queens, the title of that MK Lords article that Freedom Fiends co-host MK Lords, I think that's become a saying. I've heard like 8 people say Libertarian Welfare sure. Queens since then. It's a meme.
Well, this is something that
people should send
that everybody,
money.
But especially libertarians need to understand is that language is fluid and sometimes it changes with culture and you can't necessarily, even though defining your terms is really important to communication, sometimes cultural shift happens and words take on new meaning.
Shift happens.
And shift happens, yeah. Language yeah. is fluid because it is one of the only things that is a free market.
Man, this Russian Apple Mart is just mind-blowing.
Isn't it wild?
Did you find out what year this is?
1991, it said.
That is like literally around the fall of, you know, of communism.
Yeah, this is saying it's the months before the fall of communism.
Yeah, which, you know, you can yeah. tell it's 1991 because everyone in this picture in Russia has clothes that look like they're from the early 70s.
Yeah.
Because they're 20 years behind because communism. So what's the difference between communism and socialism? I think it's a matter of degrees on the same left-right continuum or, you know.
I'm honestly not sure.
I've been lectured yeah. by angry, you know, San Francisco people because I call one thing the other thing. And, you know, I mean, I call Republicans and Democrats socialists, too, because they technically are. And they're technically fascist, too, because they want to have a lot of government involvement in private business one way or another. Even small government Republicans do in one way or another. And if you think I'm wrong, show me a small government Republican that wants drugs completely legalized. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hey, there's some Squizzcar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now. So there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and 2 designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
We're on the radio in the Philippines right now, Dobby.
What's the Philippines like? Is it communist?
I don't know.
Let's see if Google knows.
We're on Radio Carabao, Carabao, C-A-R-A-B-A-O. You can go to the Freedom Fiends Facebook page.
I'm pretty sure it's Caribou.
I posted it.
But I don't know.
I don't think that's Caribou. I don't know, man.
I looked on Wikipedia and they didn't have a pronunciation, and usually, or a pronunciation, why is that word difficult to pronounce? It's not fair. But
yeah, we've been busy looking at pictures of Russia in Soviet
Russia.
They're
kind of heartbreaking in a way.
Yeah, they really are. You know, we were talking earlier about public art. Did you know that in San Francisco, there is a 1 cent tax, a 1% tax on any money you spend staying in a hotel that is specifically allocated for public art in San Francisco? Isn't that horrible?
Weird.
And it produces
a lot of... You're taxing the tourists to pay for the bad art?
Yeah.
Is that what's going on?
It is bad art, too, man. There's a lot of bad public art in San Francisco, including... Well, this is actually private art, but it's in a public space. Do you know 555 California, Bank of America World Headquarters? It's pretty much the tallest building in San Francisco, except the Transamerica Pyramid.
Not off the top of my head.
It's got this sculpture in front of it that's like... It's a giant...
Is it the Black Heart?
Yeah, it's a Black Heart. And the nickname for it is Banker's Heart. That's what the bike messenger used to call it. Yeah, it's a big...
We used to climb that thing and slide down it.
It's a big, black, cold stone rock. And the nickname for it is Banker's Heart. It's in front of the Bank of America World Headquarters. That is an ugly, ugly piece of art, but it is fun to climb on. It's probably, you know... Six or 7 feet tall. Oh, you'd probably be shot and charged with terrorism, and you know they'd shoot you and charge you for the bullet probably if you climbed on it now.
man,
communism. Well, that's actually fascism because the government is so into the banks. I mean, pretty much banks are the government, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The fact that I can't start a free market bank from scratch means they're just sort of. They're just sort of parasites sort of living at the mouth of the shark, if that makes sense.
That is awesome. Banks are parasites living at the mouth of the shark of government.
You know those, what are they? Those are the weird minnows that sort of gather around sharks' mouths
and pick up the scraps.
Yeah, that's what the banking institutions are. Yeah. They're the butcher launderers.
they're the cats that hang out and by the butcher shop and eat the meat that's thrown out. Yeah. We're wondering why we're looking at these pictures of people in Russia before the fall of the Soviet Union, right before the fall. And they all look really old. I mean, there's like a 12-year-old prostitute here who looks 30, and there's like, you know, 30-year-old men and women who look 60. It's the diet, but it's also just the grind, the depression of it. You know, the Russian diet was basically meat and potatoes, same as the American diet in a lot of ways, but it was like way too many potatoes, which, you know, you're not starving like in North Korea. You know, you had food in the Soviet Union, but you had to wait for it and it wasn't very good and it wasn't very good for you. You know, like potatoes just make you fat and logy. And I was thinking like, yeah, the average worker gets meat, but not very good cuts of it. And the good cuts probably go to the government Politburo workers, which is really antithetical to communism. Under communism, everyone is supposed to get the same thing, but Russia wasn't really.
Some people are more equal than others.
There you go, man. And I'm literally like, after I said that, I'm looking at these pictures and there's a picture of people looking at cuts of meat. I'm looking at them like they're mostly fat. You know, these are not good cuts.
Yeah.
Of meat.
And they're just like thrown out on this counter. Like there's no butcher paper. There's no, it's just like, here's a line of people and a counter full of meat just thrown around.
And it's funny because they're like, they're hungry people and they're looking at this meat and none of them look happy. They look like, yep, I'm going to eat that tonight. I'm not very happy about it.
Yeah.
Government.
Let me see if I can find a smile. I haven't found a smile.
We're doing, you taught me, Davi, at Porkfest when we were hanging out in person, that you can't do visual humor on the radio. And I think that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
We made it work.
Well, here, let's end it here. There's a woman in this Russian market who has an abacus next to her cash register in 1991.
Oh, Russia does
and border. That's communism
does
for you.
Border China. It's been a good show, Davi. I've had fun. And Fiend Phone.
It's been
fun. This is proof that Fiend Phone, that was an aberration last night. Somebody forgot to carry the decimal point or something. And it's all good now, and Fiendphone is going to be in the hands of the public within a week, I would say.
Awesome.
Awesome. Thank you for your service, Davy Barker.
Thank you for your service, Michael.
The Post Office, socialism for packages. Shift happens.
That's a good one, too. Although I don't think we came up with that.
Worms.